Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. This brief musical interlude, When Daisy's Pied by John Rutter, horns arranged by Allison Sniffen, comes courtesy of the Melodia Women's Choir of New York City. Its founder and executive director is my guest today. In 2003, Jenny Clark's love of choral music merged with her career as an arts administrator, and the result? The Melodia Women's Choir, an ensemble of upwards of 32 singers who present rarely heard emerging female composers through commissions, residencies, and performances. Currently, Jenny is the managing director of the New York City Arts and Education Roundtable. She's worked extensively in music, theater, and dance, including the Royal Festival Hall, London Sinfonietta, and the Royal Court Theater. And here, at Symphony Space, Theater for a New Audience, the American Music Center, New Music USA, Chamber Music America, and the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs. Jenny received a bachelor's in music and English from Leeds University in the UK and a master's from NYU. Jenny, welcome and thank you for joining me today.
Hello.
That little musical interlude was so beautiful. Tell me a little bit about When Daisy's Pied.
Well, that was one of the pieces that we performed in our program last spring, and we really loved that piece because it's so lyrical and it's just a beautiful sound. We had a quartet of female French horn players working with us for that concert called Genghis Barbie. They're a really lively, wonderful, classically trained group, and we wanted to really use them in all our program. So they performed that piece with us. And that's why we had that piece arranged with the four French horns.
It's so beautiful. And it really is emotional in a good way. It just made me feel, I don't know, happy and alive.
I think it's interesting you say that, because that's a response that we often get from our audiences, is that our music, and it surprises people when they come to our concerts, they just feel really warm. And it really touches their soul and their spirit. And they come out feeling different from when they came into the concert.
Boy, you couldn't ask for anything more than that, could you?
Yeah, no, definitely.
So what was the catalyst for Melodia? Why did this choir get started and how?
Well, Melodia is rooted in the repertoire for women's voices. And we work with contemporary women composers, but we also revisit all the repertoire throughout time that's written for women's voices. So it could be classical, it could be Bach or Britten or Brahms or contemporary.
To name a few Bs.
Yeah, a few Bs. And many, many others. But I have choral music in my
blood.
Life, in my blood since I was a tiny child. I've been singing choral music and I've always really loved it. So when I came to New York 22 years ago, the first thing I wanted to do was start singing again. So after a little while of settling down, I joined a choir called Riverside Choral Society.
And you had to do that through organized
audition.
Religion, though, didn't you?
No, that was just a question of auditioning. It's a choir that, like a lot of choirs in New York City, it's a choir that's based in a church, or they rehearse in a church or perform there, but they're not really affiliated. We perform a lot in churches because of the acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
But like Melodia, a lot of the choral repertoire is not just it's not just sacred; it's secular as well. But at one of the concerts, the conductor decided to have a section just for the women in the choir and then a section of music just by the men in the choir. So the women in the choir performed some pieces by Holst. And I just loved the sound. I just fell in love with the music. And so I started looking around to see if there was a choir I could sing with to do that music. And there wasn't really one that there was not really a choir that I could join, or there was just not much going on. So I thought, well, I talked to some people, so how about we start a women's choir? And so that's what we did. We got together, we set it up and incorporated and became a not-for-profit. And pretty soon after that, I met Cynthia Powell, who is our artistic director. And we started talking about what kind of music we'd want to do and got singers together and opened the doors to singers that wanted to investigate the repertoire. And we've continued from there.
You make it sound so easy. I'm not trying to, you know, assume that this is like finding the cure for cancer, but did it just flow the way the music does? Hey, let's put on a play and you get this wonderful organization. I mean, there must have been some bumps in the road.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hard doing anything in New York. It's, you know, it's challenging.
You need money.
You need money and you need space. And space is very challenging in New York for little not-for-profits. Finding rehearsal space that's affordable and a performance space that's beautiful and affordable that people want to come to.
Mm-hmm. Did you put up some of your own money initially?
Not really, no. I'm one of the contributors, but mostly it's been people in the group, and we have a board, and we have some individuals that support us, and we've been really fortunate to get some foundation grants. But the City of New York has been really helpful. The Department of Cultural Affairs and other funders, government funding has been instrumental in keeping us going.
When you first had the seed for the creation of Melodia, from that time till your first concert was how long?
We incorporated in July 2003, and our first concert was in spring 2004. So it was pretty fast. I think our artistic director Cynthia Powers really thought that we should just get going. So we reached out to singers that we knew, and we looked for other singers, and we started with a small group of about 16. And then after the first concert, we did a lot of outreach to try
singers.
Did
anybody come to your first concert?
Oh, yeah. We had over 100 people there.
And where did you perform?
We performed at a church in Chelsea, St. Peter's Church on West 20th Street, which was very helpful to us when we got started. They let us rehearse there. And it was acoustically, it's a beautiful space.
And you charged admission?
We charged admission, yes. And we sold tickets, and we still sell tickets. We have lots of discount programs and student and senior discounts and free tickets for the community and lots of discount programs. But our ticket income is definitely part of the picture.
And you have paid employees?
We have some paid employees, yes.
Who do this full-time?
Well, myself and the artistic director, we do our work full-time in what we do. So Cynthia Powell is artistic director of another choir. She's also the music director in a church. And she's also works in a temple as music director. So she has a musical career that includes Melodia. And I also have Melodia as part of my professional life as an arts administrator.
Do you sing in the choir as well?
I do.
Yeah?
Yes, I do.
I said that you have up to 32 women, mm-hmm. but that's not the standard, is it? I mean, the number fluctuates.
Yes,
number
it fluctuates. Singers. Yes, I think in the last concert we had about 28, and this mm-hmm. one is a little less, more like 22, 23.
And how often do you perform in the course of a year?
In the course of a year, it's usually about six times. We do our main concerts in November and April or May, and we perform them twice. And then we do other performances along the way at special events and some free performances for communities and special services, sometimes in churches or temples.
You were talking about the fact that there are so few women composers, and that's kind of a focus of Melodia, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great to sing Brahms and Bach and Britten, like you say,
yeah.
But what about the babes?
Well, there are a lot of women composers out there. I think one of the issues that comes up a lot in a discussion about women's composers is whether they have the opportunities that male composers have to get their work out there, to get performances and commissions and collaborations. And in the choral field, when you look at what's performed by most of the choirs in New York, there's definitely it's a lot more male composers, in the classical field and also in the contemporary field. We don't exclusively perform women composers, but we incorporate them into our programming, and we do commissions almost every year. Last year we did two. This year we're doing one.
So women submit their work?
We have two different ways that we do it. Anyone can submit a composition to melodia that they've already written, which we may or may not incorporate depending how it fits with the programming that we're doing that season. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a specific program for women composers. So we've had several competitions, which we announced through our website, melodiawomenschoir.org, so they could submit their work. And then we have an independent panel of women composers and musicians who would review all those and listen to clips and determine who we should commission. And then sometimes we just meet a composer whose work we really like, and we start talking to them about if they'd be interested in writing a piece for us and what it would be. And that the one that we're doing currently is with a composer called Erilyn Wallen. And that was the case with this particular composer, is that we got to hear her work, we got to like it, and we had a particular project that we were thinking of, and it turned out to be a good match.
For me, choirs are not on my radar. Do you find that to be the case? I mean, it sort of surprised me. A woman's choir. And the assumption was, clearly they would be singing sacred music, as it were. And boy, am I wrong.
The choral movement is really
you
enormous.
Call it a movement?
Well, in a way. I mean, it's something like 18 million Americans participate in choral singing.
And aren't 17 million of them in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir?
But in New York, there are many choirs, and there are many, many people sing in many different kinds of choirs. There's choirs for young people, there's jazz choirs, there are a cappella choirs, and men's choirs and women's choirs, and lots of mixed choirs. So some of them will specialize in particular repertoire. So there's a lot going on in the choral world if that's something that you're interested in.
I guess the naivete on my part is that if you're in a choir, you're singing in a church.
A lot of choirs are based in churches, and we rehearse in churches and perform in them because they, for a start, you have to have a space that can accommodate a large group of people. For rehearsals, which rehearsal studios are not ideal for rehearsing a choir because there's a lot of us and we make a lot of noise. So if you've got actors in one room and a choir in another, it's not perfect.
Not going to work, yeah.
So you need a place where you can really be comfortable. The choir members can be in one large space with a good acoustic. And the same sort of applies for a performance space as well. In New York, we have had some new performance spaces come up over the last few years, which is fantastic, concert halls. But sometimes they're really expensive to rent for the evening,
right,
which is what we have to do.
Right.
And not every space is acoustically great for choral music because you need some resonance. Some of them are fantastic and other halls are not so great. Churches generally have wonderful acoustics for choral music because that's one of the intentions, is that they should be great for singing and they have that large, huge space. So a lot of the time we perform in churches, but we generally try to mix up other venues as well, just because for audiences, they don't always want to go and see something in a church.
Do you ever perform outdoors?
We generally don't perform outdoors because the sound just goes nowhere. It's just, it's hard to hear.
It's not
confined. We sang it at a wedding outside, and it was
I was just going to ask.
It was really, it was 104 degrees, and we had to sing our socks off so anyone could hear us. And it wasn't perfect,
it's
but it was
futile.
Part of the celebration, so it was a wonderful experience. But musically, it's not that great for women's voices to sing outside. You just can't really hear us very well.
Would you like to go on tour?
We'd love to go on tour. There's lots of ideas we have about touring. The furthest we've ever been is New Jersey. So.
And all of you got your shots to cross the Hudson River.
But we would love to perform upstate or anywhere, really.
And what's preventing you from doing that?
Well, it's a question of being part of something that's going on that we want to be part of. And of course, money and organizing a group of 30 people to go somewhere is
when you can't even get a family of four to agree where you're
going
to go.
Yeah, just the organizing. And a lot of our singers, most of them have regular jobs. So we have to organize things around people's works and work lives and.
Now, in the piece that we just heard, you said there were four French horns. Mm-hmm. How often does that happen?
I think almost all our concerts, I think we've done about 18 to 20 concerts. I think two of them didn't have instrumental musicians, but almost all our concerts have an ensemble of wonderful leading professional instrumental players with us. And that's another thing that is a little bit unusual for a women's choir, to consistently work with instruments, the repertoire that's written for women's voices and instruments, because a lot of choirs just have, women's choirs will perform a cappella or just with piano.
Is it fair to say that a women's choir is unusual, or is that fairly common, that there are women choirs as opposed to mixed?
Well, there are a lot fewer women's choirs. I think in the city there, in New York City, we're about the largest one. There are a couple of women's choirs in Brooklyn, and then there are a number of smaller ensembles where they might have 8 to 12 singers, but most of the repertoire is a cappella or just with piano, or maybe one instrument like cello or something like that. So, but there are, I don't know, hundreds of mixed choirs in the tri-state area. So we're a small minority.
But you like it like that, I bet.
We sort of welcome other people singing the repertoire. Mm-hmm. The more of the repertoire that gets performed, the better it is for women's choral music. There's a little group of us, and I think if other people want to join in, that's great too, because there's a lot of different music that can be performed.
The women who have competed with their work, you know, the composers, do you find that there's just so many of them who are just so desperate to get their work out there?
Having a commission to create a new work is a really special thing for any composer. It really means a lot that you can work with a group, with an artistic director, to fashion a piece that really is created for that group. That, I think, is something that composers really welcome the opportunity to do a commission piece.
Does that make Melodia unusual?
There's not that many choirs that do commissions, I don't think. I mean, there are some, but not very many. And I think one of the reasons we started the commissioning program was as well as to create new work and work with a particular composer, was actually to meet more women composers, so because a lot of people would write to us and send us their material. But we might not commission them, but at least we would know about their work.
Clearly, there are works everybody knows for a choir. You were telling me that a poem can be set to music.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
So we have a library of about, I don't know, maybe 1,500, 2,000 pieces of music. But when we start programming a concert, I work really closely with Cynthia Powell, and she's the one that really in the end will determine which pieces we're going to perform. So we generally start with a loose theme and then start programming around that. If we have a commission piece, we'll look for pieces that work well with that. And it could be a mixture of sacred and secular work, or it could be mostly sacred or mostly secular. We haven't done that many concerts that are all sacred music, but if we have, it's just because the pieces go together, or if it's seasonally relevant.
I was just going to say, if you're singing in November with an eye towards December.
Yeah, we have done one or two concerts that are all sort of music of the holiday season,
mm-hmm.
but mostly it's more like to be a program of sort of wintry music, mm-hmm. which could just as well be poems or music, the settings of poems, as well as the sacred repertoire.
Would you sing Winter Wonderland, for example?
Not so much, no. Occasionally we've done events for holiday celebrations at other places, like at a hotel or something, in which case we would do Chestnuts Roasted by the Fire, whatever that's called.
Right.
Winter Wonderland kind of songs. But generally, it's slightly more, it's a different kind of repertoire.
And how many songs make up an evening's performance?
Well, we have panels who select the commissioned composers. But usually for the concerts, it's myself and the artistic director. We have input from members of the board and members of the choir. Cynthia does a lot of research, asking other choirs for suggestions, going online. There's a network, ChoralNet, which you can post inquiries, and other conductors from all over the country will come up with suggestions. Like, for example, if you wanted to perform some music with a string quartet, you could write and say, does anyone have any good ideas of music they've really liked for women's choir and strings? And then other conductors and composers from all over the country will come back with suggestions. And
you really do have a great network
there's
going.
There's a terrific network of people working in choral music. There are choirs like ours that are working, you know, by themselves. And then there are choirs that are part of churches. Right. And then there's choirs in colleges, which is a huge movement. And that's where a lot of the women's choral music has been taking place.
And you were saying earlier that women who were singing in college choirs then leave college and kind of find themselves adrift.
Exactly. We have a lot of singers in our group. We're really... it's been wonderful that so many of the singers are young singers and they have beautiful voices. And oftentimes they finish college and they come to New York to continue their careers. And they're adrift and sometimes they don't know many people.
Want to make a connection.
They want to make a connection and they want to continue their musical lives. Many of them have studied music or studied instruments growing up, and then they've done music in college or they've been part of the women's choir at college. And so they're looking for a place where they can find a musical home. And a lot of them have come to Melodia, and it's been really wonderful. They've made friends with each other. Some of them have started businesses together, and it's really become a family in that way.
When you look back to 2003, 11 years ago, are you really proud of where Melodia has come? Do you really pat yourself on the back and say, hey, you know, Jenny, you know, look what you did here. You gave birth to something that's really terrific.
Yeah, I do feel that. I mean, sometimes when you're applying for grants and trying to figure out the budget and everything, you think it's really
this
a downer.
Sucks. Yeah.
But then when you listen to the clips and you look at the women who have been through the group and all the music that we've done and the music that we've performed that nobody's ever heard before, and when... people are so surprised by the quality of the repertoire and the spirit of it. It's so rewarding. It really is. When I started Melodia, I didn't know it would take up so much of my heart. You know, it's become such a passion. It's taken up a lot
of
time
love.
And energy as well, but it's just become so rewarding in that way when you look at the whole picture of it.
You know, as an arts administrator, clearly one of the biggest issues is money. Is there ever enough money to fund the arts? Answer that professionally and corally.
Well, yeah, I mean, fundraising in New York is at the center of every arts, nonprofit arts activity that you do. I mean, it has to be part of the conversation from the beginning to the end because the money's got to come from somewhere to do all the things that you want to do. So you're constantly building relationships, looking for ideas, and you just can't function without that part of the picture. In Melodia, I think for small organizations it's hard because you get to a point where it's hard to get to the next level of being big enough or having enough attention to really persuade a funder that you're going to stick around, that you have sustainability, that you're professionally run, and it can be hard to get to expand that way. So I think in choral music, the choral groups in New York don't have a great tradition of having grants and things. And we've been really fortunate that we have. Our commissioning program's been funded by the Sorrel organization that's a great supporter for women's music. And they've supported our commissioning program over the years and have been wonderful. And we've had some specific foundation support for different programs, for our French programming and other things. It's been really fundamental. And we've built up some individual support. But it is very competitive in New York to raise money. You're always looking to build relationships. And it's challenging, but it's just something that you have to do. You can't not do it.
It's just your fact of life.
Yes.
Speaking of facts of life, why did you come to the States?
Well, 22 years ago, I was working for a women's theatre company in London, and we arranged an exchange program with a women's theatre company here called the Women's Project. And I was here for a month, and someone from the Women's Project went to London. And I just loved the energy of the place.
Never been here before?
I had never been here before. And the artistic energy was just fantastic. I was doing a research project that was funded by the Arts Council in England. And I went to talk to different arts organizations and arts administrators and development people in many different arts organizations. And I was just astonished at how much was going on. And people would give me tickets for things. I'd go and see things. And you go into an office building and there'd be a little theatre there. And they're doing astonishingly fantastic work. And there were some music things going on everywhere. And it was such high quality. And the quality of the artists here in New York struck me immediately as being really astonishingly high level.
What's the comparison between more involvement in the arts in the UK versus here? You know, people are always bitching about the fact that there's not enough money mm-hmm. here. Is that the case back home for you?
It's a different sort of setup. I mean, then there was, I don't know if it's quite so true now, but there was a lot of government support. If you didn't get support from the different government funding agencies, then you didn't really exist. So you didn't have to do all the fundraising that we do for private funding. I think now you probably have to do some more of that than you did before. But it was a different setup that way. But I think one of the differences is that tickets, I think, were more affordable there. So a lot more people, at least then, would go to the theater and go to a concert because it was much more affordable. Now I understand the major companies are a bit more expensive than they used to be, and people make choices about what they see.
What are some of the projects you've worked on here?
Well, I've worked with a lot of different organizations here. The one I'm currently working with is the Arts in Education Roundtable.
And what is that?
So that is a really extraordinary organization that serves all the different organizations and individuals who are engaged in arts programs in the New York City public schools and beyond. So, for example, Lincoln Center Theater, the Roundabout Theater, New York Philharmonic, and many smaller organizations are sending artists into the schools to work on a particular curriculum that involves
exposing children to the arts.
Well, it's not just exposing children to the arts. Sometimes it's actually using the arts to help them engage in their regular studies. For example, it could be in social studies or English or music. But in New York, we have a curriculum for arts and education, so it's for the arts. So there are teams and teams of artists and educators working in the schools that are all part of all the different arts organizations. So the roundtable is the place where they all come together and support each other, share best practices. And what's extraordinary about it is that the cultural scene in New York is generally, you know, each organization sort of has its own community of audiences and funders and sort of protects that. But with the roundtable, we really share ideas and come together and support each other.
For a common good.
Yeah, which is to support the work that goes on in the New York City schools.
And so you're responsible for all of that. You oversee
groups. I work with the representatives from all those different groups. The other extraordinary thing about it is it's a member-driven organization, so everyone gets together to really decide what they want to do. So I help to organize and facilitate that, help the organization be at the center of advocacy and the hub of information about the field, and really facilitate the message that there's some extraordinary work going on in the public schools, in the arts.
That must give you such great satisfaction.
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
But you must also be one hell of a busy lady.
Yeah,
a lot
can
of balls
be.
In the air that you're
That's
juggling, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel good about where the arts are going today? Are you kind of buoyed by what's going on?
I think the last few years have been really tough since the recession for the arts. So I feel that we're sort of crawling out of a pretty dark,
deep hole.
Mm. So I think there's optimism in the sense that people are emerging from this difficult period, that audiences are starting to buy tickets more and people are getting jobs again and new ideas are beginning to grow. The flowers are beginning to peep out from the snow.
The daisies are getting pied.
That's right.
They?
Yes, they are. So in that sense, it's optimistic. The arts in general have a lot of challenges because they need to build new audiences. The audience that was traditionally going to the arts is
getting older.
Mm-hmm. So we have to find ways to collaborate with younger people and find the ways that they enjoy entertainment that work for them. The older generation. My generation, we like to go and watch things, but the younger generation doesn't always want to go and sit and watch things.
That's
if they
for
have
sure.
an evening that they're not working, they might actually want to do something where they can engage with their friends mm-hmm. and have a cultural activity at the same time. So maybe do more than one thing that's rolled into each other, or meet new people or whatever it is. They don't necessarily want to do something that's passive. So the arts is kind of looking at ways to engage that by having events around their performances or social activities combined with the performance, or venues that are sort of relaxing and or more relaxed and less formal. They can have a drink before the show or, mm-hmm. or whatever. So I think that's one of the challenges moving forward is to engage the younger audiences and remain competitive with all the other ways that people can spend time these days.
You said that there were younger women singing in Melodia.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about that is that they'll bring their peers to a concert.
I was just going to ask. So the audience is full of young people as well.
Yeah, it tends to be a real range. A real range of people who've never been to a concert before, never been to a choral concert, or classical music just isn't their thing, mm-hmm. but they want to give it a try because their friend is singing. And then the classical and choral audience, who there's something on the program that they like or that they're interested in, they don't know us, but they'll just come. And then all the different ticket programs that exist, people will give it a try. They'll buy a ticket and come, and we have a core audience as well that likes to hear what we're doing, and they're interested in women's arts and women's music. So it's, our audience is a real combination; it comes from many different places.
That's just so great. Well, all I want to say to you, Jenny, is keep making beautiful music and keep doing what you do. And I used the term before, and it's been used a lot, but it just sounds like such a labor of love. And I was really excited to have you here as my guest today.
Well, thank you. It's been great to be here.
Thank you so much. Join us for another edition of The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. And now the Melodia Women's Choir of New York City is going to take us home.